Blog Talk Radio. Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Get ready to be the best you can be. Stay tuned for the Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules. Well, welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California, and I am so happy that you decided to be with me as we talk to celebrated author Guy Finley about his latest book, The Essential Laws of Fearless Living. We're going to bring Guy on in just a few moments, but I wanted to remind everyone about some really, really terrific things coming up on Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Next week, we have one of the stars of the movie, What the Bleep Do We Know? I love that. Dr. Quantum himself, Fred Alan Wolf, will be here as we delve into time travel, everything we need to know about how to break free from the chains of linear time. He may also discuss spirit, space, consciousness, and the possible origins of the universe. Yes, it's going to be a big show. And you never know what you're going to get with Dr. Quantum, except a wonderful time that expands your thinking into new possible realms. And as always, this is what this show is all about. Some of the other great guests coming up on the show is Daily Om co-founder Scott Bloom. Coming on with Marcy Shimoff from The Secret, and Malika Chopra, daughter of Deepak Chopra, will be coming on soon, too. It's going to be great. We have so many things to discuss. You know, as our access is opening up globally, I am able to bring on such fascinating guests from New Zealand, Australia, India, Buenos Aires, Sweden, the UK, you name it, we can bring them on. And it's just fantastic to hear their perspectives on everything. And every week, we find that the world is embracing these spiritual principles that springs out of our ever-expanding clarity of the law of attraction. And that clarity is like the 100th monkey effect. It really has taken hold. There is now a worldwide phenomenon coming from this vortex of understanding. And from that vortex comes a huge wave of peace, prosperity, and the undeniable truth that we are magnificent, divine, and powerful beings. So I want to also remind everyone to keep on sending out those emails to encourage people to sign up with our Living Angel, Jo Dunning, and her Abundance Breakthrough Project. This is our opportunity to assist the shift of consciousness around the world we're going to shift her from the lack of fear to love, peace, prosperity, and harmony. I don't know why I got stuck on fear there. What would this world be like if we could create an abundance that's just overwhelming for everyone? Well, I'm really looking forward to finding this out because I think it's going to happen. Some way, somehow, we're going to all come together and shift this consciousness into becoming a fantastic planet. What a great thought this is to put out to the universe, isn't it? Doesn't it just make you excited to think about it? Well, I just want to remind you to go to joedunning.com to sign up under her free events, and don't forget to pass the word on this. The deadline for it is midnight on April 14th. And I'm pleased to announce that the Law of Attraction Radio Network is growing by leaps and bounds. Every day, more and more people are attracted to this network for our empowering radio shows. Law of Attraction Radio Network is not about putting the burden on others for our well-being. It's about each of us standing up to be the powerful creators that we are, knowing that well-being abounds for everyone. The show Snap Out of It does this precisely, as well as I Am in the New Era Both excellent, excellent shows. And Todd Silva takes us into the spiritual acts of giving, while the other shows focus on being of service, like the Six Degree Shows. Other listeners learn how to change their vibrations to enhance their relationships, like by the Relationship RX show, as well as to become the parents and to learn how to be the parents, to grow our children to be consciously aware. And that's by the Leading Edge Parenting Show. The Law of Attraction single shows teaches us how to break out of that fantasy world and understand our true selves to match up to others with our core beliefs. And how powerful is the word feel in our manifestation? Well, on Feel It Real Radio, Denise shows us that the intensity of our emotions influence our manifestations. And it is just a terrific show that you've got to hear. And then we've got a brand new show, The Mystic Sir Richard, talks about the metaphysical applications of the mind. And finally, I'm thrilled to announce the Think, Believe, and Manifest show with Constance Arnold just premiered an hour ago, right before my show, and she is just dynamite, absolutely dynamite. So you are absolutely going to love each and every one of these shows. Remember, unplug from the mainstream media and plug into a love, peace, and harmony mindset here on Law of Attraction Radio Network. Now, our listeners know that we have a choice to live in joy or fear, and the majority of us are focusing on rewiring our brains from limited and negative thinking. This is truly a new era of thinking. We seek to find the essence of what we want, with the bottom line of every desire is our basic need to increase our sense of well-being. So it's a wonderful, wonderful time to be alive and to fully be present and to experience all of this. And I am so thrilled you are here to experience Mr. Guy Finley, who has written over 35 books and audio programs that have sold over millions and millions of copies in 18 languages worldwide. In addition, he's presented over 4,000 That's 4,000 unique self-realization seminars to thousands of grateful students throughout the North America and Europe over the last 25 years. That's really, really impressive. Guy has been a guest on hundreds of televisions and radio shows, including appearances on all the major mainstream media networks. He's the director of the nonprofit Life of Learning Foundation in Merlin, Oregon. So it is my pleasure and thrill to introduce Guy Finley to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Hi, Guy. How are you?
Hi, Jules. I'm fine. Thank you.
Well, thank you for coming on. I'm really looking forward to it. Guy, you came from a very interesting background of show business, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, I suppose some people might think that it was. I guess you're asking me to say something.
Well, I was wondering. How did those early experiences contribute?
Jules, yes, I was. My father is considered the pioneer of late night television talk shows.
Mm-hmm.
Before Johnny Carson and Jack Parr and the men. Presently considered to be the creators of that genre, my dad in 1950 and 51 introduced the whole idea of the variety television show, talk show, to the nation.
Wow.
And as a result, I was my running mates when I was a kid. I was raised with the children of the Martins and the Arnezes and the Sinatras and the Minellis. And the Lewises, these were my pals. And I had a great education as a result of this social standing that I was born into.
Mm-hmm.
That had a profound impact on my life from starting around the age of 6 years old. I began to realize that something was wrong. And, you know, in a nutshell, I wasn't able to, at that age, you know, you don't have enough worldly experience to be able to measure and comprehend the context of the world you live in, but I couldn't help wonder why it was that here were these men and women, famous, wealthy, attractive, and desired by the world at large, and why were they so dysfunctional to the single, to everyone, my parents included, frightened, angry, anxious, trying in one way or another to get the upper hand in any social situation, and it just didn't make sense to me, Jules. And that, I mean, if you wanted, you know, when did it start for me? About the age of 6 years old.
Wow.
I wanted to know, why is it that with all the things the world says you should be happy, you're not? And that, and my life has been that long quest for the answer to where is it that we find this genuine abundance and contentment that our heart of hearts knows we're intended to have.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. So that really started you on your journey of self-realization and how to teach other people, didn't it?
Well, I never thought about teaching other people. I just was very passionate about wanting to know why, and for myself too, you know, why do you have to be nervous around other people?
Mm.
Why do you need the approval of other people to feel as though you're worthwhile?
Mm.
Why do we measure ourselves by the things we have? I mean, all of the questions that, by and large, present society takes as a given that that's what you do, because to be successful means that you acquire enough possessions that people perceive you as being whatever that value socially is, accepted as being successful. And I had problems with it at an early age. I spent my teens and 20s in the music business, Jewel. You may not know this. My partner and I, Tony Martin Jr., we were the first white soft rock artists ever to sign with Motown Records.
Wow. Wow, that is really an accomplishment, huh?
Oh, it was very cool. This was
back in
1970.
Wow.
And I had a very successful writing career. I wrote music at Motown. I had music on platinum albums. I had music, motion picture, and television scoring. Then I worked with Neil Diamond and was recorded on his label in the middle 70s, and then came back to Motown late 70s. And in 1979, I realized that I had been on the wrong road, and I quit. I retired altogether from that career, went around the world hoping to find something or someone that could help me reconcile this growing and now certainty that that the fullness of heart and peace of mind that I was searching for was never going to be answered by anything that this world could reward me as a result of my efforts. And I'm not saying not to go out and be the most successful human being you can be. I'm just saying that there's reasons that we run these races that we do, cross the finish line as often as we do, and never really get to rest because there's always another starting gun.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I wanted to understand that, and that's what my life, you know, after 79, I came back and I worked as a carpenter for about 7 years, and then I had a great encounter with a genuinely illumined man who I spent 14 years working with till he died, wrote The Secret of Letting Go in 89 or 90, my first best-selling book, and then have been talking and teaching ever since.
Wow.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
And it's a blessing for us that you changed careers. It really is, because you are generating a lot of insight for all of us. You wrote, anytime we turn our backs on what frightens us, we also turn our backs on the self-compromising acts those fear-filled conditions attract. This is really, really powerful statement here. Can you go into this? Because this is really the basis of your book, isn't it?
Well, in a way, yes, it is, Jules. What my writing is about and my life, the things that I try, and I don't, you know, I know I'm, people consider me to be a teacher and all that. I don't think of myself as a teacher. I think of myself more as a, there's no word for it, a shower.
Mm.
I want to let people see what I've seen. Then they can do with that understanding that comes from it as they will. And what I have seen and understand is that we have been very sorely misguided, tricked, if you will, not by a culture, but by a consciousness that gave rise to that culture, in which fear became a secret part of our value system.
Mm-hmm.
And the way it is described in terms of a part of our value system is that whenever we believe that our value or worth as an individual depends upon what we possess or how others perceive us, that's a recipe for living with attachment and dependency upon those possessions and people and their opinions of us. And every time the world changes, as we've just seen a massive global shift that's mm-hmm. really rocked the old boat, that when we see this and then the fear comes, we make the terrible mistake of understanding that it isn't powers, Jules. We don't look. We're in the trap we're in. When we're afraid, let me slow this down a little bit. When any of us are afraid, is it not true that the reason we're afraid is because that event or that person's action is felt to be something that may take away from us something that has given us temporary power?
Yeah.
Is that agreed?
Yeah.
That by this, by owning that, by being approved in this way, I feel as though I possess not only this thing or this job or this authority, but I also possess myself as defined by that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And when we live like that, can we see in the moment when fear comes that what is being threatened in that moment is our own very best idea of what we thought it meant to have power? And that in such moments we don't realize the task has always been the same task. And I'm, how do I say this? All of this is valuable. Every experience that we have, no matter what shape or color it comes in,
mm-hmm.
is vital to our self-discovery. Because only through the consistent willingness to be honest in the moment with what life brings us do we realize that the problem we've had as human beings is this mindset that tells us we need powers in the first place. We don't need powers. What we need to do is stop rendering ourselves powerless.
Right.
Because in the moment where we cease and desist from conspiring with this unconscious mind of ours that delivers us into the hand of fear while telling us we must protect ourselves from something feared, then the whole game goes away. And it's not a process of creating for ourselves a state of contentment, security, love, and happiness. It's a matter of discovering that we were never apart from that true condition of our higher consciousness, except for where it was that we listened to false parts of ourselves tell us what we needed to do to acquire those things.
Mm-hmm.
It would be like a human being listening to something in them tell them, look, you don't have a head. You got to go find one.
That's right. That makes sense. So are you saying that fear is, in effect, self-denial?
All fear, all psychological fear, Jules,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
is the negative byproduct. It is a byproduct. There is no fear in and of itself. It doesn't exist by itself. It's a negative byproduct of the mind asleep to itself, producing negative imagination. What happens when an event comes along Let's say, and it can be an event that comes to us as a result of world action, or it can be a thought of ours that says, you know, I'd like to change the kind of job I have.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to be a different kind of man or woman than one who is always in fear of losing the approval of others, whatever it may be. Whatever the sea change is in that moment, the minute that it takes place, via a thought that we have or a thing that takes place, the mind seizes on that moment and makes of the moment a meaning that it lends to that moment. The event itself has no fear in it, period. The fear is the product of our mind telling us what the event is going to mean to who we have imagined ourselves to be. It is a moment in which we are our powers, in quote, of being in possession of this or secure through that, is suddenly threatened. And we haven't the mindfulness yet to realize what good are powers of ours if they can be threatened by a sea change. What good is any identity we cling to if it can be thrown into conflict by a person merely scowling at us? So in the instant in which the sea change comes, the moment takes place, the mind, without our seeing it, and this is where we begin to regain our relationship with authentic power, the mind, without knowing it, begins to tell us what's going to happen to us. It does it with remembering other negative experiences that were similar. It does it by reacting through a form of instantaneous denial, because it seems to be that event or person's actions take something from us. And here's the point. The moment the mind produces the meaning of the event and we are frightened by what the meaning is, the same mind, Jules, the same spiritually sleeping mind, then begins to resist the image that it has made. It looks at what it has prognosticated unconsciously and goes, oh my God, I better protect myself from this. Or I better go take a drink. Or I better go yell at somebody and blame them for what happened. Notwithstanding, it makes no difference what we have ever done in the face of a fear to change the event, because the fear we feel is not the product of the event, but the product of our own mind asleep to itself, that by resisting that moment actually creates the moment it fears. Resistance is negative attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Resistance is negative attraction. The more you don't want something, the more you ensure you will be enmeshed in it. So if I actually see the truth of this, and here's a favorite example of mine, Jules, would you go to an art store? Listeners, would you go to an art store, a gallery, search the walls for a painting that when you looked at it, it made you sick to your stomach with fear and dread? Buy that painting and take it home and put it on your bedroom wall so you could look at it every morning when you get out of bed.
That's a great analogy.
Huh?
That's great. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, that just sounds crazy, doesn't it?
Sure.
And
does.
We would all say, not a chance. I would never do that. And I tell you that every time we encounter a limitation and the fear of it, that is exactly what has happened. We have met ourselves without knowing the self we've met, and we have been defeated not by a power greater than ourselves, but by attributing power to something that never had authority in the first place, save what we granted it for our unawareness of our authentic nature.
So what do you suggest we do when we have fear, when that comes up and we have fear, as we all do, and I'm sure we will? Can we live a life without fear? I've just given you two questions there.
Yes, I'll answer the second one first.
Okay.
The answer is we can live a life entirely uncorrupted by fear. We can live a life in which it is possible for every moment of that flash of resistance, that and I'll throw this in not to confuse listeners, but that necessary reaction. You know, I have to jump around here a little bit, Jules. You know, can we see, if we slow a little bit down here, can we see that the way, when we have grown, Jules, when you've grown, did you grow because you didn't run into a limitation, or did you grow because you ran into one and you understood its nature so that you transcended the order of yourself that was the limitation?
It's definitely because of the contrast.
That's exactly right. So look at us. Every time a life brings something that we don't want, the first thing we do is we resist it. Mm-hmm. Because there is a knee-jerk reaction on the part of who we have been, on the part of that developed personality, that self that became this or that through whatever avenue it did, and it clings tenaciously to what defines it and what promises its continuity. Anything that threatens that identity or the continuity of who and what I have been is seen by that nature as an enemy. But we can awaken to a completely different order of ourself that begins with realizing that, you know what? The only way I can ever discover an authentically limitless life is by encountering the inherent limitations and realizing they exist only because I don't understand that something in me is creating them. Then we become a different person because, and this is what I say is the root, when a person understands the following idea, they are on the road to authentic fearlessness. We are made for what happens to us, Jules, made for it, and I don't care what it is. We are created with the capacity to find within that moment, that person's action, that terrible event, no matter what it is, we are made to find within it the part of us that it reveals, and in the revelation of the part of us that would run, and this comes right home to the first thing you asked, that would run from the fear and hide from its face, when we see that what we're hiding from is what we have yet to understand about ourselves, then we exit that moment not only free of the condition that we thought held us captive, but we are now one step above the order of ourself that created that captivity by resisting the event in the first place. Are you following me, Jules?
Yeah. From what I'm hearing you say, that in order to live a life of free of fear, that you're going to have to go down deep within so that you can release it and release all the resistance and recognize it. Is that correct?
That's right. But the beauty of this is that it's not you releasing it. It'd be like you trying to pick yourself up by your bootstraps. You don't release the fear. Your role in this is to become conscious of it.
Oh, okay.
True consciousness, the light of awareness, cannot compromise itself. What is genuinely loving is incapable of producing the opposite. What that does when we're willing to, for instance, see that we are not what we've pretended to be.
Mm-hmm.
I see, for instance, that, I've always thought I was a kind person, and then in an act of impatience, I lash out at someone, and usually I blame, and we do, usually we blame the people around us for our actions towards them.
Mm-hmm.
And then one day you realize, you know what, that's childish. This person did not cause me to get negative. This person revealed in me this potential I have to be negative.
Right.
I owe them a thank you. This is why Christ said, love thine enemies. Mm-hmm. Because that moment, that person was a point of, and what would the right word be? Revelation. They brought you an instant in which they revealed that they didn't make you that way. They showed you what you brought with you into that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're aware of ourselves in this new way, Jules, we catch these negative forces. And I better throw this in, because we have a deeply social conditioned guilt about our own negative states. And by the way, it is this lower self that fears itself. Light doesn't fear anything. How silly. Do you think light fears a shadow? So if we fear ourselves or resist ourselves or hate ourselves, incriminate ourselves for our negative states, it seems as though it means we really care and that we're not the negative state we're condemning. But I tell you that only a negative state condemns negativity. Love reveals negativity. Light opens that negativity up, that unconscious force, to the possibility of a new reconciliation. And I'll say it simpler. When we are aware of our fear, the very awareness acts upon not just the thing that we fear, but the self that carried forward that fear in the form of an attachment that was no longer necessary, because by the very light, Jules, we realize we are not that man or woman who needs any longer to define themselves by that relationship.
Okay, so you're saying, what I'm hearing, you're saying that our fear, we just need to recognize it's there and that's it. We don't have to do anything. It will just take care of itself.
Well, yes, in a way. And we can. I have an exercise that I can give the listeners.
Oh, yeah.
Concerning this. It's called Stop, Drop, and Endure.
Hmm.
Stop, Drop, and Endure. Now, the first part we covered a little bit,
mm-hmm.
the stop part. Because once you actually wake up a little bit, and we'll say it this way, our problems are due to an unawareness on our part of what our mind is doing. Therefore, the solution, the authentic solution, must be awakening to a new awareness of what we've been doing all along. Because just as you won't hold on to a hot skillet, because the instinctive part of a physical body will not damage itself, how much more so is it true of the spiritual aspect of ourselves that has been given this body and that uses this body for its purposes? So if we can be awake, then we can begin to end all of the ache that comes with sleeping spiritually. So stop, relative to fear, means, okay, you know what? That person just said something to me. I just heard that my company may downsize. You fill in the blank. There's 1,000 things that can cause us to get stricken with fear. In that moment, what happens, Julie? We described it. The mind immediately seizes on that event and makes something negative out of it, right?
Right.
It attributes a negative meaning to the event. So if I don't attribute the meaning, or better yet, if I just see that, you know what, I'm about to go buy that painting that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
I can see my own mind wants to frighten me. And if we're just that aware, that's the stop part.
I see.
We just simply see that our mind is starting to drag itself into all of this stuff. Now, here's a key. When the mind begins to do that, there is an instantaneous resistance to that negative image. I call it the contraction. We all have a capacity to be awake, aware of where that contraction takes place in the psychic system, where suddenly we feel that, oh, you know, that little, oh my God, that little fear that flashes through us.
Oh, yeah.
That's the tell. That's the giveaway. The moment that anger flashes through you. That's the giveaway that something has taken place that you have immediately resisted. You know, when somebody is rude on the freeway or something like that, we think that somehow or other that they did that and that our anger towards them is what follows.
Mm-hmm.
The truth is that they do it, and at the same moment they do it, it would be a non-event to us if we didn't have an ideal or an attachment to how people should be. So it's difficult to understand, Jules, but the event and our reaction to it are fairly synonymous. And the reaction is always a form of resistance when we're negative. So resistance and the event are actually one thing in this mind, And out of that comes all of the fear and anger. So there's the contraction, that momentary seizure of our system in which ordinarily we would run along with all of the thinking and feeling that follows. And that's the drop part. First stop. Catch the contraction. Just be as awake as you can and realize that your mind is getting ready to start talking to you. Mm-hmm. If you had a friend, Jules, who every time they came over, or a group of friends, every time they came over, all they did was first tell you what was wrong, and as they were telling you what was wrong with your life and what was going to go bad, then they started telling you, selling you protection measures, and then you realize that what they're selling you doesn't protect you but really lines their pockets, how long would you stay friends with people like that?
Not very long. But they probably wouldn't be coming into my life right now. Because I'm hoping I'm never going to attract that.
Well, listen to me. You see, this is the point. We all have that living in us, Jules.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to think to ourselves, I don't want to attract that. We have in us all of the, you've heard that expression that we were made in the image of the divine, image of God?
Absolutely.
Well, that means that within each and every one of us, Jules, lives every force, every energy, every field, light and dark,
mm-hmm.
attractive and repulsive, accepting and denying. Desire itself, Jules, is that, you know, is, I don't know how much scripture a person knows, and this isn't religious, so please don't get turned off by it. Instead, hear the truth of it. There's a beautiful passage in the New Testament that says that you cannot serve two masters, for you will love one and despise the other. Have you ever heard that one?
Absolutely, yeah. Great one.
Do you know what they're talking about there?
The fear?
The two masters. The two masters is desire.
Oh.
Because you see, you can't want something without fearing the opposite. You can't love something without resisting anything that would take that you love away. It is a two-headed creature, desire is. Whatever you wish for, an opposing force is created. And the way you know an opposing force is created is that the more do you make the wish to make a change, then you feel something tell you you can't.
Okay,
but
so
we don't... Go ahead.
Back it up here a little bit, because now I'm getting confused. Now, I'm hearing what you're saying, but if you're saying that if I focus on creating something wonderful, then I'm also focusing on creating something negative.
I'm saying
I heard
that. Yeah, that's right. For instance, let's say that I have the idea that I want to, and this is very popular today, you know, I need to create new wealth for myself. Well,
okay.
if we examine the motive, well, you know, I want to create new wealth for myself. Well, when I think about it, I see myself with greater security. I see my children going to colleges that I want them to go to, that I can afford. I see myself being able to buy organic food instead of the junk they serve otherwise. You know, you fill in the blank.
Sure.
But can you see that in the moment that the whole idea comes, in fact, we'll restate it, it wouldn't even occur to me to want to create new wealth for myself if I weren't afraid that by not doing it, I'm going to be relegated to this less than ordinary life. This is very deep and important what we're saying, because you see, anything that tells you you have a less than important life is lying to you. No matter what you have.
Exactly. So you're saying to be in the present where everything is absolutely perfect the way it is right now. And so you're saying to let go of that fear instantly because you're living in the perfect conditions right now,
just the way you are.
Is that correct?
I'm saying that if you see, no, see, you don't have to idealize the perfect conditions. This is what I'm trying to lead to.
Okay.
We mustn't idealize anything, because if we see the truth of ourselves, For instance, if I see that fear is a lie, I don't need to idealize a perfected life. I'm in it because I stop punishing myself. I don't need to idealize abundance. I don't need to idealize love. Because if I stop hurting myself and those I love, then there's no pain that needs to be idealized through a future to come in which I'm better. So there's this consistent act of our present mind that is always trying to become something.
Okay, now that's good. Okay, I'm hearing what you're saying.
All right, so now
what about contrast though? Because seeing and the contrast actually will motivate us to move us to a higher way of thinking that or so a different spin on things.
Yeah, this is where, yes. And I know what you're asking me, and you're right, and I'll explain it so that everyone can understand it.
Okay.
Look, let's say I'm listening to you and myself speak, and I'm thinking, well, you know, I've got this idea, this business plan. I have this new ambition, and I want to create it, and because I believe in it, and I want to do it. Are you saying I shouldn't do it? No, I'm not. I'm saying that everything we do, if we see it fully, presents to us a certain lesson over and over again. And one day, when we've had enough of these lessons, we can skip certain grades, to use language. We can see, for instance, that there was, you know, I didn't know any better than to want to have a new car. I thought that if I had a new place to live, that my friends would respect me. I would respect myself better because, you know, my parents, they didn't do anything. They told me I'd never amount to anything. And by God, I'm going to. And I believe that the value of my life, the esteem of it, depends upon this achievement. Well, look, that's the best that we can do at that moment. But when we achieve it, when we set out and acquire those things, can we see that when we get there, it's not enough? That it didn't do, on one hand, what it promised to do? Instead, it left me feeling as though I got to go do something else. And we know that's true about our lives. There's never enough of what we think we need to make us happy. And the great lesson in that is that these steps that we go through in our choices, in our actions, in what we acquire, they're intended to eventually reveal to us that we needed to let go of who we were to see that, okay, you know what, that didn't do it, and this didn't do it, and finally, I get it. I don't have to acquire anything. I don't have to have approval. I don't need those possessions in order to be at peace with myself and know an authentic love.
Mm-hmm.
All of those lessons were to bring me back to myself. So I don't need to become anything anymore. I'm actually being led step by step into what I call the presence moment.
Right.
Into a life in which I realize that I can go out and do the things I love. In fact, I must, because it's how I come to know myself. Mm-hmm. But little by little, I can realize that when I'm afraid, and we'll go back to the exercise now, it's because I got caught with my mind trying to protect something that I thought was essential to my identity, and that fear was the outcome of that identity, and I don't want anything in my life that produces fear, no matter what it costs me. So when the fear moment comes, I come to the stop, and then I drop all of the associated thoughts and feelings connected with what fear is telling me. That's why I asked you, would you let friends come over and convince you that something bad had happened and then sell you insurance? That's what fearful thoughts and feelings do. They support the idea that what you just saw in terms of the image your mind has produced is real, and then those thoughts and feelings want to guide you to a point where you'll be safe. When it comes to fear, the feel is real, but the why is always a lie. That's true of any negative state. The feel is real because it's produced by this resistance. But the why is always a lie because the why is always something our mind has created that then it resists. So we've got come to a stop. You feel the contraction. You drop all of those thoughts and feelings that are whirling around and trying to drag you into whatever it is doing. And here's the real lesson now, Julie, Jules, asking what you did. This is where we come to the endure part.
Mm-hmm.
Because these blind forces in us, Jules, these unconscious desires, not the one that we made conscious, because we became, didn't we, the instrument of what we want, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we don't realize that when we become the instrument of what we want, that we are also picking up what desire doesn't want too. Can you see it?
Yeah.
So now, suddenly, that unwanted desire, that fear starts to surface, and ordinarily, it's very painful. Fear is painful. Anger hurts. And the knee-jerk reaction of this false self is to find some way to blame someone for it, or divert our attention from the actual state of ourself by promising us a pleasure to come when we finally plan our way out of the mess. But now we're not going to do that anymore. We are going to stand in the light of that awareness that is produced by that stopping, and then we're going to bear what happens to us when we refuse, when we drop those associated thoughts and feelings. And essentially we're saying we're going to remain in the present moment with nothing other than our awareness of something that has been asleep in us all along that we didn't know was there. And as we become conscious, Jules, of this content of ourself that has been buried, asleep, and in a completely passive state until that event stirred it and brought it to the surface, the very awareness of that unconscious aspect of ourself is the transfiguration of that order of energy and of the self that was identified with it. And we exit such moments, Jules, a new order of human being who no longer has the fear we did because we are no longer the person we were.
Okay, without this fear, can you experience joy? Because
I'm going to say it to you differently, Jules.
Okay.
How can you experience any joy that has fear attached to it?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Can you? You're knowing the exact contrast.
Yeah, what we call joy today is not joy; it's excitement. And excitement is always born out of a momentary identification with the acquisition of something we were identified and attached to.
Now, when you are connected to the universal source, is that not joy? Is that not love? Is that not absence of fear?
Yes, but listen to me now.
Okay.
The reason it's absence of fear is because it's absence of you. Real joy, real peace doesn't have an identity as in I have joy, I have love. Because if I have joy, if I have love, Jules, then you have a divided life. There is love, there is joy, there is stillness, there is contentment, there is beauty, and there is our beautiful capacity to be in conscious relationship with those eternal qualities. But the minute that I say, I've got this, or I have, or I made this, the very instant that takes place, who doesn't know that, by the way? Just a common example. You go someplace beautiful, and the moment of authentic beauty is not filled with you going, oh my God, this is beautiful. As a rule, the more you talk about how beautiful something is, the more you distance yourself from the relationship that is beauty itself. That's what we're after seeing. Because you see, the divided life, we're capable of being conscious of it, and we end all of the misery that we produce without knowing it by simply waking up. That's the whole thing, Jules. Simply learning to be watchful instead of willful. And then when we go through the permeations we do and we see what we create, to realize, you know what, it's okay that I'm empty after winning this award. I don't have to, I finally saw it. I've won 10 awards now, and I've been empty 10 times worse each time after the award. I get it. I can't fill myself. And the self
so,
that wants...
So are you saying that you cannot be fulfilled with getting an award?
Are you saying
that's impossible?
No, I'm saying that to understand that the order of yourself that feels fulfilled by that reward is the order of self that has to be transcended. Because the moment that I find myself rewarded by something, I am terrified the reward will be taken away. It's inescapable. If I win something, I don't want to lose it. Do we agree with that? So the victory brings with it the fear of defeat. And it's inescapable. But there's nothing wrong with the victory or going for it once we start to understand that that is the natural action. That's what we must do. How else would we learn that the only way we'll ever know this limitless source of divine intelligence, of love, is when we realize that no matter what we set out to be, the instant we set out to be it, we have created a limitation for ourselves.
Okay, you state that the true secret to having everything you want is want what life wants.
That's what we've been talking about.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that is exactly what you're saying.
That is it, Jules.
Okay.
Good for you. That's exactly it. Because look, you know, in some ways it's so obvious. All of us want to have a fearless life.
Mm-hmm.
All of us would like to be unswervingly kind and compassionate.
Absolutely.
All of us wish that we could be generous at all times. You fill in the blanks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, can I be like that if any event can turn me sour? What we're saying here is that the only way I'm ever going to fulfill this longing, and by the way, a divine longing, to
okay.
be this open, full, complete human being, is for me to discover that everything that happens to me, I have to see the goodness of it.
Yeah,
no matter what it is. And if I don't, Jules, then I'm never going to know the very goodness I claim I'm seeking. Yes?
Can you say that again? I think that's really deep. Could you say that again?
We are created, thank God, to be able to see a deep and everlasting goodness in everything that happens to us.
Yes.
And until we can see that goodness in everything that happens to us, how will we ever be the instrument of that goodness that we all know in our hearts we're meant to be?
Oh, yeah, that is so true. I can feel that down to my core. That is absolutely right.
See, and so look at that beautiful, proper benchmark for ourselves, not to judge or compare ourselves, because we know we all miss the mark all the time, but to realize, you know what, my boyfriend just did this, or my father said that, or my mother's going, whatever it is, and I can feel this negativity in me. How do I want this moment? Are you saying that I should want my father to be an alcoholic? No, 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 no. I am saying, why don't you stop enabling him by disapproving of him and attacking him? Why don't you, in certain instances when things happen that you don't want, why don't you stop blaming the event and look closer at the wanter?
Yes.
You know, little things that we can do that change for a split second, which is what the stop, drop, and endure exercise is about.
Mm-hmm.
Can I change the possibility of this moment by doubting the certainty of my own negative reaction?
Mm-hmm.
which in itself it sounds stupid. You mean, how could I be so certain that the only solution here is for me to suffer or make you suffer because of what you did? That's crazy.
Yeah.
So we sow into our own hearts and minds these new ideas that begin with learning to doubt fear and to understand that negative states are not intended to guide us. Who turns to anxiety to tell us how to be free of rushing? But that's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we rush, anxiety is telling us, just get where you have to get to, and I'll turn off the heat.
Right.
We have all gotten 10,000 places and never changed our relationship with anxiety. Why? Because we've never met it. We've yet to bring that unconscious state into the light of the awareness that we're given for that purpose, so that we can transcend that nature by changing it through transforming it, literally transforming it. And that's the endure part, Jules.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I don't blame people, I don't take a drug, I don't turn on the TV, I don't distract myself from my own discouraged state. Instead, I see it straight up.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize only by seeing straight up that not only is it a lie with regards to what it is telling me is possible for myself, but it is a lie in and of itself, because the more I resist it, the more I define myself by it. And I'm done with it. And you can be, by the way, listeners, completely done with it as you discover the truths that Jules and I are talking about.
And it's right here that I want to bring in the very opening chapter you wrote, and I think this is so beautiful, but I want all the listeners to hear this. There is no brighter gift, no greater potential given to us human beings than the presence of the timeless light within us, whose power makes all things possible. Its celestial character knows we have not been created to live as the captives of any fearful condition, let alone those we unconsciously create for ourselves. Wow.
Yes.
I love that.
And I love that you love that, Jules. Because, look, see, what we're saying here is that we're no longer going to be trapped, tricked into not wanting our own negative states.
Mm-hmm.
The you that doesn't want the negative state is the negative state you don't want. I'll say it again. The you that doesn't want that negative state is the negative state you don't want. Light does not resist negative states. It changes them. Our task is not to be great. It is not to be powerful. It is to be merely willing to see what is true about ourselves and to allow the very light of that truth to set us free by revealing to us that we are not what we fear.
Wonderful. And we have got 1 minute left, and I need to give out your website so everybody can go there and purchase your book. It's essentiallaws.com, essentiallaws.com, or guyfinley.com, both great sites. I love the guyfinley.com, by the way. That has
actually, Jill, so much. It's guyfinley.org, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. And listeners, there's months worth of free material there.
Oh, yeah.
And at theessentiallaws.com, you get a free DVD and free MP3s with any purchase of the book. And lastly, if I may, Jules, I'm going to be at the Omega Institute in the fall. I'm going to be at the Kripalu Institute. This is back east New York. And then in Massachusetts in June. And then, of course, on the West Coast, we have a special talk series in early June. So go to guyfinley.org and check it out. Learn what we've been talking about. Implement it. And the changes you want, I promise you, will take place.
Well, Guy, thank you so much for coming on. I've really enjoyed this deep, deep conversation. And I can see by the chat room everybody else did, too. So thank you.
Jules, You're a, Jules, you're, may I say, and I don't always say it, you're a delight.
Oh, well,
you're
thank
a,
you, sir.
No, you're a delight. No, you are. You're a delight. You know, it's one thing for people to say, I love the truth, but when you talk truth and you don't pull punches and still you love the truth, to me, this is, we've got most of the battle done. The love of truth is the first part and the last part of the journey. Keep up your good work, Jules.
Well, thank you, and so do you. Thank you. You're a blessing to us all. And to all the wonderful listeners, we will talk to you next week. Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio hosted by Jules Johnson. For more information, go to www.lawofattractiontools.com.